To everybody, I'm an alcoholic and my name is Mildred. I'm really glad to be here with you. And if you want to sit back in the sunshine, that's okay. I always like people around me. I guess I feel more comfortable that way. Anyway, I'd like to start with some silence. As I said to you last night, I can't teach you. I can tell you some things. I can't change anything inside, and you know that. That has to be done between your soul and God. I take no responsibility for that whatsoever. I take responsibility for the preparation that I have done and my willingness to share the truth. And as I see it, and you can say she's full of crap, and that's fine by me. They have gotten me something so I can write some things. So I've been hard at it this morning. As a teacher, I just feel clumsy when I can't write and put something out that people can see. So I'm feeling very comfortable with that beside me this morning. So what I'd like to do is let's go to the silent place within. And then when we have done that, I'd like to open with the third step prayer. The third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me, and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Okay. How many were not here last night? A few? Two, three, four people? Okay. We talked last night about what the concept of spirituality is and how really what I'm talking about is the spirituality of the steps, and I'm talking about that simply because I have never been able to... The only way my life has come together is through the focus on that power bigger than I am, and through coming to some understandings about that. And that's really what I'm trying to share, because ultimately I've got to live in my own skin. You've got to live in your own skin. And you know, last night I put to you the three most important questions that were posed to me. Who am I? Am I this body? Is that what this is about? Is it about how much I can accumulate and what I can accomplish, etc., etc.? Second question, where am I going? And the third question, what am I doing here? You know, and I think if I can't answer those questions, what am I doing? I'm just like a feather in the wind. And that, to me, is what this big book of ours really is showing us. I think you can read this book and you can read it simply as a means of not drinking. And if you do, that's fine by me. I have no problem with that. But I think you can also read it as a textbook for the growth of your soul. And that's really what I'm interested in, because what I have discovered is this. There was a point in my life in sobriety where I had a lot of stuff. I lived on a park bench when I came here, and then at 7 years I started buying houses and I made a lot of money, and I thought that was going to make me okay inside. And it took me till I was 20, 21 years sober to realize I wasn't okay inside, and another whole process of surrender had to take place. And the walls came down, and then I started to get real. And then I started to be able to relate to people and have a new relationship with God and with myself. So, I put a few things, and I'm going to go quickly because I'm going to try and keep myself to the schedule I made. What I learned from step one, we talked about that last night, and I'm not going to go into detail, except I'm not the boss, and neither are you. So, I did not make the universe, I didn't make myself, and I didn't make you. So why would I think that it's my job to try and push you around so that you are the way I want you to be? Me, I'm a guest here. You know, just like I'm a guest here in Bob's house. By the way, Bob, thank you for your generosity and your graciousness in providing your home. What a wonderful thing this is. Just lovely. Bob's one of my loves, and don't worry, Michelle, and one of my heroes. If all this is true, that I'm a guest here, then I'm part of. See, I said last night, I think the book is so well put together because this is the start. This is what knocks us to our knees and starts the process of the reduction of the false self. I'm a part of. I don't want to be part of. I want to be the whole enchilada. That's what the ego says. That's what the false self says. And if you don't do that, I don't like you, because you know, you should know who I am. So there we go. My way is not working. So maybe I should give it up. How many times have I banged my head on the cement and come out bleeding and bang it again? I'm not here with a magic wand, so you don't have to worry about me. I'm not going to try and change you. These will be here, and if you want to copy them, you're welcome to. I put some reflections for some suggestions for reflection, and you might talk about these things if you feel comfortable doing that when you do your small groups. Five people you find challenging. Luther says you could put a one in front of it, but I didn't. Name five situations you would like to change. You see, when I put this together, my hope is that you'll go home with something that you can apply. If you can identify, I don't like these people. I find these people challenging. Or, I don't like this situation in my life. Sitting here won't do a damn bit of good. But maybe, if I realize I don't have a magic wand, you are where you are. You're doing what you need to do. And it's not my job to change you. So maybe I can apply that to this. What efforts have I made to change people and situations? And if I have, has it worked? You know, I often find when I do this, when I try to change, not only does it not work, I make more trouble. What have you sought? You know, we talked yesterday about we want power, and we seek stuff that we associate with power, that the race consciousness tells us it makes us somebody. I'm not somebody, and if I have $5 more million, then I'll be somebody. And if you can see the house I live in, then I'll be somebody, etc., etc., etc. Are powerless and helpless the same thing? You know, I didn't know that they were not. You know, I also like to, from my own experience, put some ideas together, because it's one thing to say this stuff, but there's stuff in that happens to us like this that can help me then to go to the steps, and the steps are richer and more meaningful. I can write 2 + 2 = 5. Luther asked me last night if we can use the power of God to do bad things. You can use the power that's in you to write 2 + 2 = 5. The principle of mathematics doesn't sit there and cry and say this is too bad, but you will get the consequences. What? You apply that to your banking, to exams you write, to construction, to cooking, and what you will get, you'll have a messy life, a painful life. You'll be confused and say, why doesn't my life work? And your life will be in disorder. And there's no use praying to a God saying, fix it. I've got to take a look. What about this one then? If I go through life saying I'm the boss, they should listen to me. What's going to happen? Exactly what happened to me. I hated everybody. I judged, I criticized. When I do that, I take more than my share. I don't care about you. See, Chuck said, and now I begin to see what he was saying. He said, your problem, Mildred, you make problems by drinking alcohol, but that's not your problem. Your problem is you think you're separate more than my share. You are my problem. I blame you. I'm the one writing 2 + 2 = 5. I'm the one acting as if I'm the boss, but I blame you. Amazing. I control. You know, some of the great teachers got together some years ago, and they were three principles that they came up with. One, that there is an invisible intelligence in the universe. Two, it is in everything. It's in those bushes. It's in every one of us. It's in the stars. It's in the trees. It's in the birds. It's in everything. And three, and this one hit me right in the stomach. I almost drove in the ditch. Three, because that invisible intelligence is within us, me, you, do not ever try to control anybody. Let that invisible intelligence talk. Sure, we can tell people things. We can do all kinds of things. But to try to control is not my business. That statement changed me. And so, if it's all about me, and you know, that's another thing. I used to think I was sensitive. No, I wasn't sensitive. Sensitive means I have concern for you. That's sensitive. What I was self-obsessed. It's all about me, 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 me. And there's nothing sensitive about that. As a matter of fact, you become hard and very unpleasant through that. And again, life takes on. What about if I learn from my experience and say this isn't working? And then I come to the point where I say, yeah, I'll take that. God is everything. And if God is everything, then God shows up as me. And then God shows up as you. Now we've got some working capital in my thinking. Because if God is showing up as me, that tells me how I should be thinking. And if God shows up as you, it tells me how I should be dealing with you. I don't have to like you, but I do have to recognize the presence of God. And I can tell you, I don't believe that governments are going to change the world. God bless them all. And I don't believe that lawmakers are going to change the world. The world is going to change one at a time as you change your energy. And the energy of love and goodness that we put into the race consciousness, if we do it, the day will come when it will be unacceptable to make war. It will be unacceptable to see people die of poverty and unacceptable to see people die because they don't have the necessaries, etc. I am a guest here. You are a guest. Maybe then we can do business together in a different way. Then we could talk about oneness. You see, I think it's great. There's Einstein. And we think about Einstein as, you know, as the great scientist. And what I think Einstein really was a mystic. If you read some of the stuff he says there's only one of us here. He got it. You know, like Stephen Hawking saying, no, I don't believe in the God of religion. But he said, if you mean by God that great power that flows through everything, of course I believe that. Then what's life like? Life flows. Life is joyful. I don't mean we're giddy, happy. I'm not happy every day or, you know, giddy. Life is in order. There is some degree of stability because I'm not reacting to everybody the way I used to and having the kinds of things going on. And then my energy is freed up for creativity. I think, you know, until some of these changes took place, they really just took place in the last years. I'm a slow learner. I didn't have time to be creative. I was too busy reacting to things. And then, you know, I'd have all this emotional upset, and then I'd have to live in the, you know, in the fetal position for a while to get over it until I could go back and do something constructive. Another way to see, think about it, just give it some thought. Is this how the world works, the Hollywood version? If you've got the right body, can you still take the front row here? No? I better stay over here, eh? The Hollywood version, the sitcom version. Do you ever think how things get solved in a sitcom? Everything gets resolved. I remember one time I was having some real conflict with a man in my life. Imagine that. And I was really unhappy about this stuff. And I watched this sitcom. And he had cheated on her. And she walked over to the window. It was about 28 minutes after the hour. She walked over to the window, looked out the window, and came back and said, you know, I forgive you. Yeah, right. I mean, we see this stuff. It's part of our world. And if we're not careful, I mean, I'm not going to give up watching television and sitcoms and all the rest of it, but I watch it a little more consciously these days. What about the corporate version? You know, the man at the top, get the corner office and get there any way you have to. The therapeutic version, I'm going to fix you. You know, I've seen programs and they say, we're going to empower you. I looked up empower in the dictionary. It means to give power to. How the hell will... I shouldn't say that, should I? How am I going to give power to you? You've got your own. I can't give power to you. So, you know, what I can do is tell you some things, share some things with you, and if they motivate you and you change your behavior, what will happen is the power that is already within you will flow. I haven't given you power. I hear people say, I gave my power away. That's a good trick. How are you going to do that? Or they say, I took my power back. From who? Who took it from you? How did you give it away and how did you get it back? See, language influences us, and the way we say things, you know, indicates some. I sometimes stop up sponsees when they say this stuff because I don't believe it and I don't believe it's the truth. The power is within me, and if I'm asleep and act as if you are more important than the power within me, I'm not giving it away. I'm just asleep to it. And if I wake up to that through my pain, I didn't get it back. I've always had it. I'm just exercising it now. How about the not drinking version? It's all I have to do. Just don't drink and I'll be fine. How about the big book version? So, you might ask yourself, do you buy into any of those? And I put a few pitfalls to growth. Asking why. Waste of time. Yeah, waste of time. If it's in my life, it's here. What's it doing here? What's in me that brought this into my life? Struggle. I get aware sometimes how often I'm struggling. I become aware oftentimes how often people say they're struggling, they're having a bad time. See, I don't think we were meant to struggle. I think we're going to struggle, but I think that's what spiritual growth is about. The more we wake up to what is really going on, we'll start being smarter. You know, I've made a discovery. When I'm operating from ego, I really get stupid, real stupid. And I do very stupid things. I get so much smarter when I'm tuned into the spirit. Try it. How about the focus on the horse manure? You know, how many times do we focus on what's wrong and keep talking about it and talking about it and talking about it and talking about it? I had a sponsee one time who said, "You're not a good sponsor." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because you won't let me talk about my problems." You know, and I had listened to her problems I don't know how many times, and finally I said, "Enough," you know. And I said to her, "If you have a pile of horse manure in your living room, do you stir it every day? And do you smell it? And count the maggots in it? And oh my goodness, yesterday there were 5 maggots, today there's 7. Whoa." So we cover it up. We don't do that. We get the shovel and start shoveling, don't we? And I think that's what we have to do with things that aren't going right. Doesn't mean we can change them overnight, but I can start to do things different. Your map. How do you see your life? See, I think that if I put my life into the hands of God, I don't have to give God a map. My maps always wind up. You know, Tom Ivester said all the things he ever planned went bust, and that this power guided him to be exactly where he should be, and I absolutely buy that. There's an author I read, and some of the people here are now reading that author. His name is Joel Goldsmith, and he says, if you are embarking on a spiritual path for self-enhancement, he says, don't bother. Don't waste your time. Embark on a spiritual path because you're a spiritual being and it is appropriate. See, it's been my observation. You can't use God. You can try to use God for your purposes, but it's not what the deal is about. If you try to serve God because that's who you are, then things unfold quite different. My timetable, kind of like my map. And then, you know, waiting for miracles. Maybe God will work a miracle today. Hey, God works miracles every day. Your heart is a miracle. The world is a miracle. The stars are a miracle. Everything, if you want to think of it as being wonderful and grand. Nothing is going to happen. Like, I don't believe in miracles. I believe in mystery. That's what I believe in. I think it was Joel Goldsmith who said, got it. He said, what God can do, God is doing, and God is doing all the time. And if I want God to do that in my life, I've got to open out a way. And isn't that what surrender is? Isn't that what step one is? I don't know how. I don't know what the next step is. And then we can be shown. I, some years ago, made this little diagram because I do a lot of counseling, etc. And I know it's not perfect because if we're talking about God, there should be no lines. I don't know how to draw it better. I'm trying to make a point. And the point is that, yes, we live in this body. We live in our human experience. Absolutely. I like to call it a spacesuit. I think we put this body on just like the astronauts put on their spacesuit because they have a job to do, and to do it, they need that suit on. I come to the planet, and to grow spiritually, I need to have a means of acting in this world. That's my body. Now, the book says deep within, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And I believe that that fundamental life force is in everything. So, what about this? The book says the main problem rests in the mind. What is that? That's where one of the old-timers took me aside and said, you think your mind is your intellect, don't you? And I did. And he said, no, that's your inner world. What is my inner world? It's composed of my old ideas, my old beliefs, memories, judgments, feelings, habits, the childhood stuff. And when we get to step 8, I'm going to do a little piece on that stuff. The stuff we heard, the stuff we saw, the stuff we repressed. Because we're the product of that. And I still have some things. It's not about whining about childhood. It's about understanding how we operate, you see? And so the way I look at it, this is our work, to clean out these pipes. If you have a reservoir with pure water in it, and you turn on the taps in your sink, and you get rusty water, what do you know? The pipes are rusty. See? If I've got old ideas like I had, nobody loves me, I'm nothing, I'll never amount to anything, I'm not important, etc. This life force flowing through those old ideas, it can't come into my life in the purity of its goodness. And then it's up to me to get this cleaned up so that those belief systems that I start to see the world different, that I think different. And I already did that, so I'm going to start in step two. Bill says in step two, in his story, Ebby said to him, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" Today, I think rather of the God of my experience rather than the God of my understanding. Because the God of my I don't understand about God. That's not where I think the work is. My soul knows things that my intellect doesn't. You know, if we look at the history of mankind and God, the day was when the ancients believed in the God of the sea and the God of the winds, etc., etc. That's what they called God. See, God is a developing idea too. And there was a day when we believed, I bet some of you believed in a God that lived up there and was watching you and punished and all that kind of thing. And I'll talk a bit about God baggage. You know, and it was kind of an anthropomorphic God. We looked at the way our father was, and then we said, my daddy was this, and then we said, that's the way God is. I don't believe that at all. You know, God isn't made in the image and likeness of a person. And then we come to this idea. You know, you hear it all over these days. I'm a spiritual being, and that God is within. And that whole idea of God being up there separated from us, watching us, has changed into this. And there are teachers on the planet now who say God is appearing, because if God is everything, then we are made out of that, and God appears as us. Who is the God of my experience? May the 20th, 1973, what had I done to earn? See, we don't earn grace. And I don't believe that grace is an unmerited gift. Because if it's unmerited, the implication is there are gifts that are merited. And I think that's nonsense, because everything is a gift. There's nothing that we have earned or whatever. I was on my way to take my life, and I didn't ask. I didn't say a prayer in the traditional way. All I knew was that I was finished with life. I couldn't do it anymore, and I was going to kill myself, and the compulsion was removed. I can't tell you how many times a week I think of that. When things are going in my life in a way that I don't like, and think about that power. What, you know, that tells me there is a power. That tells me that there is a power that is in relationship to me. That power cares about me if I will let it in. I don't think God says today, I'm going to arrange the day for Mildred this way. I just think it's a power of good, and if I open my soul in it, you know, it can flow and it can work through me. Another experience that I had, the God of my experience. Shortly after I came into AA, I was at a meeting, and somebody told something at that meeting. I just cringed as this person told this, It just seemed so inappropriate to me. And I totally expected that the people at the meeting would shut that person down in some way. To my utter amazement, they didn't shut that person down. What they started to do was, one after the other, they shared embarrassing, humiliating, tough, painful experiences from their own life. I couldn't believe it. What they did was give that person spiritual love. And I could see the energy in the room changed. And the energy in me changed. I wasn't reading the book. All I was doing was going to a few meetings. And I came away from that meeting a little cleaner inside. And I learned something that day about spiritual love that I have never forgotten. And about the great reality. And how that, I think, is what the steps do. They remove some of the hardness and the judgments and all that stuff that keep us. And, you know, I could go through my life and tell you all the amazing things that have happened that shouldn't have happened. You know, I remember the day I went to my sponsor's accountant and said, I'd like to buy something. I have no money, and I'd like to make some money. And he said, you have none, and therefore you have nothing to invest. And within 10 days, I had bought my first house. That's a God shot, and I won't go into that except to say that. So that's the God of my experience, and I invite you, if you have some difficulties in your life, think about the God of your experience. You know, there are so many ways in which my life is made easier, because if I'm tuned in, I was on my way to the airport one day, and I had changed suitcases, and I forgot to change my passport, and I had locked the door and was on the way to the limo when something inside said, passport. I live 50 miles from the airport, and if I had gone without my passport, I'd have either had to come back home, maybe miss my plane or whatever. Instead, my way was made easy. I think we have to open our eyes. You know, like I read last night, the man saying to God, God, speak to me. And the thunder rolled across the sky. You know, God touched me, and the butterfly touched him, and he didn't recognize it for what it was. Our life changes, I think, when we do that. And that's what I believe that come to believe is all about. What if you really said, I believe that God is everything? You think about this world. How many billions of years has the planet been here? And it's only about 40,000 years ago that man came here. But it's only 500 years ago that a man decided to sail west to go east, because he no longer believed that the horizon and the sky met and that he'd drop off if he continued going. Where would we be if that hadn't happened? Where would we be if the Wright brothers hadn't said, we're going to make this thing fly? Everybody said, no, it's not going to happen. See, look at all the things that have happened. I love this story that in 1899, the Secretary of Patents recommended to the president that they close the patent office because he said everything had been developed that could possibly be developed. 1899, we were kind of still horse and buggy. And then today, you know, we know that this place is filled with subatomic particles. If you want a thrill, read The Divine Matrix by Greg Braden. You know, it's a book that he's a NASA scientist who has become a spiritual teacher. And he talks about this idea that we live in a world, you know, 100, 110 years ago, we didn't know about the atom. You know, I read some of the stuff 200, 300 years ago, we didn't know about the workings of the body. And today they can catalog things right down to the finest detail. ever seen gravity? Have you seen electricity? We believe in that stuff. How about the wind? How about oxygen? Are these not constant and impartial and predictable parts of our lives? See, I grab onto anything that I can to make this more real, because I do not believe that the answers lie in stuff. The answers do not lie in what my five senses can apprehend. It's a much bigger deal than that. And there have been poets who understood that, like I think it was Tennyson who wrote this little poem. He said, "I do not see the wind at all or hold it in my hand. And yet I know the wind is there because it swirls the sand." And God is very much like this, invisible as air. And yet we know and see him in his goodness everywhere. And I often think when I go to a meeting or when I am with a group of people who tell me they're alcoholic the way I'm alcoholic, how did the compulsion and the obsession get taken? I do not see the wind at all, and I don't see God. I experience God in the things that God does and the effects of that activity of love. See, what I believe does not affect actuality. It's really important that I figure out what I really believe. Do you know what you really believe? Do you believe in something or do you believe that? I used to believe in a whole lot of things that other people told me were true. Today, I believe that from my own experience. There was a man on the planet, Joseph Chilton Pierce, and he had studied the body, and he was also a philosopher, and he was a scientist. And he said that he believed we only needed 10% of our ability to live our lives well, do our jobs, etc. He said what we needed was the 90% so that we could WONDER. Because he said that is how our lives would really change. And if there was ever a group of people who should WONDER, I believe it's alcoholics. You know, I get the same feeling looking out at you that I get standing by the ocean, looking up into the starry sky at night, looking at a sunset, looking at the mountains. I remember the first time I saw a mountain, I was absolutely speechless. And still am. And then we come to that statement in the big book, either God is everything or nothing. And he says, we'll get to that place by a self-imposed crisis. I don't think one day we get up and say, oh, I think, you know, maybe God is everything or nothing. We finally saw, wrong page, here. When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis that we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? I was about 18 years sober when that hit me. I don't know how many times I had read it. It's like I never thought too much about what happened to me the morning of May the 20th, 1973. But the day this happened, I was about 18 years sober, and I remember thinking, oh my God, if I say that God is everything, that means God is right here, right here. Not some other place, not in some temple or some church or in some holy person. God is right here. And that means then, if that's what you believe, then everything has to change. I couldn't, you know, it has taken me a lot of time, you know, to get a way of feeling that. Sometimes I don't feel it, but I do believe it. And I think that's why he says, I'll tell you one more idea that I find helpful. And it was given to me by one of my spiritual teachers. And he says, think about yourself like the ocean. The ocean has qualities. It's salty and it's wet and it moves. What if one of those waves in the ocean woke up one morning and said, gee, I'm too dry. I need to get a little wetness here. It's crazy, isn't it? The wave has gone to sleep. What would you say to the wave? You have to wake up. You're wet already. You are wet. You are salty. You are the ocean. See, I think that's a very good metaphor for thinking about ourselves as part of God, and that everything, rather than, I used to use this metaphor, and I don't use it anymore because I don't believe it. I used to use the metaphor that I'm like the fish swimming in the ocean. The fish and the ocean are two different substances, or like a button in a glass of water. They're contiguous, they touch each other, but they're two different substances. The ocean and the wave are made out of the same thing, you see? And where that takes you, I don't know. I know where it is starting to take me. And then he says, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. You know, it always strikes me that when it comes to the spiritual life, we have to do it, and then we get to see it. It's not the other way around. Many things in the human world, they show us how to do them, and we see them, and then we do them. But I think in the spiritual life, that's one of the reasons I think Alcoholics Anonymous is so powerful, because we see people who share their stories, who share their pain, who share what has happened to them, and then we hear that, and based on what we have seen, we do it, and then we experience it and see it ourselves. And so to wrap this up, there's another thing in the chapter to the agnostics, the eight bedevilments. You know what I'm talking about, page 52, where it says, you know, we were having trouble with personal relations and our emotional natures, and we were full of fear, etc., etc. That's a good inventory question. It's a good sometime if you're thinking about how am I doing? You know, because when I came in, I had all that stuff going. After 37 years of sobriety, where am I with all that stuff? It's a good way to take a look at your life. And he says again, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. You know, and I would ask you, think about this. What can you take from this idea of step two? What can you take from that and take it into your life in a practical way that will make a difference? He says, we have here a design for living that works. And I think, I'll just close with this, because I think the Master talked about this. I think it's one of the ways that we grow in God awareness. He said, how can you say you love God whom you don't see when you don't love your neighbor whom you do see? You see, we always get to the practical business of how can we apply these? I'm not the boss here. I am powerless over life. I'm powerless over you. And that leads me then to, is there a power? What do I know about that power? How can I apply that power in my life? And one of the ways that we can get to it right away is to practice love for one another. And so with that, I think it's time that we have our first coffee break. I will...